Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Interior Paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Your Honor, may I have this depiction marked as an exhibit for identification?
Okay. So, for ID?
Sure. For ID only, yes.
Exhibit 000 for identification.
Thank you, Madam Court Reporter. Your Honor, may I hand it to the witness?
Sure.
I'm handing you Dr. Russell Wood has been marked for identification as 000 as in orange. Dr. Russell, do you recognize that depiction?
Yes.
What is it?
This is a diagram of canine dental anatomy.
And could you please just for the jury briefly describe dog dentition and what we mean by the term dentition? I think most know, but just for the record.
So I believe dentition just means the, you know, the teeth and the shape of the teeth and of the mouth of the animal or a person. And what this diagram shows is that in general, dogs tend to have a triangular mouth, meaning, you know, it comes, you know, to a narrowing towards the front of the mouth. It shows how many teeth a normal dog will have, and what they look like. There are different kinds of teeth, just like humans have different kinds of teeth.
And Your Honor, to assist the jury in the understanding of what Dr. Russell was speaking about, with Your Honor's permission, could we publish this as a chalk for the jury?
Is there any objection?
None, thank you.
Okay. Sure, go right ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. And we'll enlarge Mr. Wolk, the Dr. Russell, where would you like to start with regard to this, just to give the jury a brief discussion of dog dentition? Which part of this should we zoom in on?
I think the lower half, around the triangular upper and lower jaws, right there.
Right there? Very
yeah.
Good. And Mr. Wolk, if you could just, to start with, pull it down just so we can see the headings, and more importantly, the jury can see the headings of those two diagrams that Dr. Russell has pointed out. Yes, and just enlarge that. Can you read what's on the left and what's on the right? It's a slightly blurry.
It's slightly blurry.
Mandible, lower jaw, maxilla, upper jaw.
Yes, I can read it.
Right. Alrighty. So if we could then just reduce it back down so it's a little bit so that it's not distorted, and then Dr. Russell, if you could just talk about it. And before we do that, I think it would be helpful, Dr. Russell, we can go to the depiction up above just to get the overall picture up above there of the dog. All right, is that that's an overall picture, correct? Do you want to point out anything generally on that picture?
I don't have a pointer, but generally it's a side view, and it shows and it's a skeletal view, so there's no skin, and it shows that there are some prominent teeth. They're called the canine teeth, and then there are some smaller teeth in front of that. Or,
excuse me, if I couldn't interrupt, pardon my interruption.
Yes.
I'm just going to try to locate in the courtroom a pointer, Your Honor, if there's...
There's nothing on that standoff to us.
I've got one where I may approach. If there's one, I'm
No.
Yeah, I didn't see them. May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you.
Here, Dr. Russell, hopefully
okay.
That will work for you. Thank you.
Excuse me.
Okay, so this is a side view. And it shows, you know, shows many, many teeth, and it shows, and this is skeletal view, obviously, and it shows these prominent teeth, which are called the canine teeth. Humans also have canine teeth, and ours are not as quite as prominent. And then there are some teeth in front of that, which are called incisors. So that's the overview.
Right. And just to put this in context, we are looking at this and talking about dogs. Have you had the opportunity to review any photos of the right arm of the decedent in this case?
Yes.
And is one of the topics you're going to address whether those wounds are from a dog?
Yes.
And so this is this background in terms of dog dentition part of what you're going to cover for the jury later on?
Yes, and I want to make one more comment, if I may.
Please.
Just when a dog bites, they usually don't bite with all of the teeth. They usually don't get all the teeth impacted on the individual. So that's important to know. Oftentimes, it's the anterior or the front teeth.
Why, doctor, is it the case that a dog doesn't always have a complete bite, get all of the teeth? Why is that the case?
Well, there's oftentimes movement. Oftentimes the dogs aren't really trained on biting techniques. And so, there's oftentimes the person who's being bitten is pulling away and trying to avoid the bite. So oftentimes there's only impact with a few of the teeth in the front.
Great. Please continue, doctor, with your...
Dr. Russell, could I ask you to use this screen?
Oh, yes.
I think it's easier for counsel.
Oh, okay. So overview, these large canine teeth, these are the anterior teeth. And as I said, it's very rare for all the teeth to be involved in the bite. It's usually just the front teeth and canine teeth.
Are there certain teeth that are on this depiction that cause certain types of injuries, abrasions, tears, punctures? Is there any relation to the teeth in any of those categories, or can it be just general?
Well, oftentimes, because the canine teeth are so long compared to the others, they are the ones that seem to cause the large puncture wounds. And those are the ones that appear to get the grip on the person's skin.
Is there a medical term for a puncture wound from a canine? Or is it just a punctate wound from canines?
I'm not sure there's a medical term.
Okay, please continue.
Okay. Well, that's about it on this side view.
And is there any other view on this exhibit that you would like to discuss with the jury?
Well, I was going to show that it's triangular. Again, upper and lower jaws. Yeah, they tend to be somewhat triangular.
Is that also sometimes the shape referred to as an hourglass, or is it triangular, or you prefer triangular?
I've heard it referred to as hourglass. I don't see an hourglass, maybe in some dog breeds, because all, you know, the different dog breeds have different shapes of their mouths. But This is just a generalization.
Okay, please continue.
I don't know that there's anything else.
All right. And so you
think... Oh, actually, yes. Yeah. So here you can see... Can you go back, please? So here you can see, again, the canines. And it's oftentimes the... This is the upper jaw, the maxilla jaw. It's oftentimes these teeth that do the impacting.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say it's often these teeth that what?
That do the impact. The upper jaw is oftentimes the part that actually makes contact with the skin. That's all.
Thank you. We can take that down, Mr. Wolf. Thank you, Your Honor. Now let's go to dog-inflicted injuries on humans generally. What type of injuries to humans can be caused by dog-inflicted bites?
Well, there are lots of different types of injuries. So they could be extremely minor, from a minor scratch to puncture wounds by individual teeth to actual puncture and punctures by several teeth. There could be several abrasions because there are multiple teeth involved, and if they don't puncture, they at least scratch. They can scratch the skin. That's what I call abrasion, is a scratch. So they scratch the skin, but in parallel, because the teeth are lined up. So they oftentimes have parallel lines. And then, of course, there are, you know, bruises that could occur because of the crushing injury, and there can be what we call avulsions, which are where an actual flap of the skin is removed. And I can go further, but there's a wide extent of injuries.
So there's a wide extent, a wide range, and can you just give one or two factors that are going to determine whether you're on the more minor side of the range to the more major part as regard to the type of bite that the dog is able to get?
Well, I think that when there is penetration of the skin and pulling away of some of the tissue, I would consider that a more significant bite because of what's needed for treatment.
Just bear a moment, please. Thank you. So, in terms of the nails and claws of a dog, what type of injury, if any, can those cause?
So the nails they're also somewhat pointy or triangular in configuration or shape, and so they can cause scratches, and actually they can cause even deeper wounds if the nail catches the victim's skin a certain way. But most of the time, just scratches.
From your experience, what type of medical experience, peer-reviewed article experience, your whole professional experience with dog-inflicted wounds on humans, do you have experience with just a part of the range or the whole range of injuries that a dog can inflict?
Well, I think I have a very wide range of experiences because those very serious ones we talked about in the very beginning, where there were crushing and ripping injuries, or those were the trained canine dog bites. Most emergency physicians don't even get to see those. They're so uncommon. But because I was assigned to jail ward, that's how I got to see them. But in the majority, in the main ER, the main most ERs in our main ER, we saw the more minor type of injuries.
So, in terms of if someone is bitten by a dog, where are they? Again, I think most people understand this, but just to be clear for the record, when someone gets a dog-inflicted wound, where do they usually go?
Well,
sustained. Ask it differently.
Doctor, are you aware of the medical facility, from your experience, where people go who have dog-inflicted wounds?
Well, if they feel like they need medical care, they will either go to a family doctor or most likely the emergency department, because the emergency department is where the resources are, the people that with the experience. They go to the emergency department in general.
From your experience for people and your literature review and authoring of documents, do people with dog-inflicted wounds go to a veterinarian for treatment?
Yes. I'll let you answer it.
Not from my experience.
All right. Now let's move to another category. And to keep this moving along, how did you initially become involved in this case?
Well, very interesting. I live in Los Angeles, and I saw something in the Boston Globe about this case, but I really didn't pay much attention to it. And then eventually I saw or heard something, because I'm not from this part of the Massachusetts. You know, I'm from a different part of Massachusetts. So anyways, eventually I heard or saw something about there being an issue with some possible dog-inflicted injuries versus maybe car-inflicted injuries. So that got my attention. I thought, that's interesting. And so that's how I initially became aware of the case.
Let's talk about the Boston Globe. How is a person from Los Angeles reading the Boston Globe? And
well,
why?
That's
is
a
it
very
like a one-time thing, or why is it you're reading the Boston Globe?
You know, I had a subscription. I would, not always read it. I lived in Massachusetts. I went to school in Massachusetts. I worked in Massachusetts as a police officer. So I have some interest in Massachusetts, but none of that was in this geographic area. It was all north of Boston. So that was the area I mostly paid attention to.
Did you reach out to anyone after reading that article? And what do you recall from the article in the Boston Globe, if anything?
I'm going to sustain that objection.
Did you reach out to anyone after having read something in the Boston Globe?
Yes. I thought the question was interesting.
Objection.
I'll let that stand, but just answer Mr. Alessi's question.
Yes,
please.
Yes, I did.
Go ahead. Answer.
Okay. Yes, I reached out to one of the DAs in Los Angeles County.
And at that point, what, if anything, did you know about this case?
I didn't know much. I just knew what I mentioned. And I knew that the decedent was a police officer, had been a police officer, and that interested me also because I was a police officer.
Please keep your voice up, Dr. Russell.
I said that interested me also because I had been a police officer at the time.
Hey, go ahead.
So that's about all I knew, really.
Right. So did you know anything about what the prosecution was claiming or the defense was claiming at all? Did you know anything?
Objection.
Sustained.
What did you know, if anything, about the case?
I'm going to see it side by side quickly on this.
Moment, Your Honor.
Okay.
Just got this thing. Okay, thank you.
Doctor, in terms of Mr. Wolk, if we could please, and Your Honor, may we publish what is already in evidence, which is Exhibit 167?
Okay.
Dr. Russell, do you recognize Exhibit 167?
Yes.
And how do you recognize that? Well, first let's start, what is it, and then how do you recognize it?
It is a picture of the decedent's right arm and forearm.
Now, without stating what it is, have you been able to form an opinion as to the source and nature of the wounds that are depicted in that exhibit?
Yes.
Now, in terms of the next area, can you describe for the jury what method you used in forming your opinion without yet stating what your opinion is?
Well, I used pattern recognition and differential diagnosis.
So let's start with wound pattern recognition. Is that the wound pattern recognition you've been discussing up to this point in your testimony?
Yes.
And did I hear you use the phrase differential diagnosis?
Yes.
Please tell the jury what you mean by the term differential diagnosis as a physician, emergency medicine physician and forensic pathologist.
So when a patient, when a physician sees a patient and, an image in this case, and is attempting to make a diagnosis, it's very important that not only do they consider what they believe is the obvious, but also in their mind go through other possible diagnoses and determine if they can rule them out, so to speak. You know, if they can rule them in, rule them out, so that they are not just focused on one thing, but they've actually given consideration to other conditions that may be causing whatever it is that they see.
So, Mr. Wolk, if you could take that, we're going to come back to this back and forth, but I'd like to have it taken down until we do have the need to, and if we could have the lights go back on, Your Honor, thank you. So, applying a differential diagnosis, well, let me start out. Do you understand what confirmation bias is?
I believe so.
Yes, and does differential diagnosis assist or not assist in avoiding confirmation bias?
I believe it assists in avoiding confirmation bias.
So in terms of differential diagnosis, did you apply that concept in the beginning of your analysis of this case?
Yes.
How did you apply differential diagnosis to, among other things, avoid confirmation bias in this case?
Well, in my mind, I went through other possible things or causes of wounds on an arm, and what they would look like, and the configuration, the patterns, etc. And then I figured out why these other potential causes of wounds in the arm. Did not fit this case.
So is a phraseology a synonym for differential diagnosis, what doctors call ruling out something? Is that another way to say it as well?
Yes.
So we're going to come back to the differential diagnosis. I just wanted to have that question first. Now let's switch to the materials that you considered in forming your opinion about the nature and source of the wounds to Mr. O'Keefe. Describe what you looked at in terms of coming to your opinion, conducting a differential diagnosis, and avoiding confirmation bias. What did you look at?
Well, I looked at pictures similar to this. So there were pictures taken at the hospital. There were pictures taken at the medical examiner's office. I looked at the medical records. I looked at the autopsy report. And I looked at other reports from the Massachusetts State Police. Those are some of the things I looked at.
Did you look at any photographs, including of clothing?
Of what?
Clothing.
Oh, yeah, clothing. Clothing, of course.
What clothing did you look at?
So there was a shirt, like a hoodie shirt that I looked at that had many defects in it.
And when you say defects, what do you mean by defects? Is there a more layperson's term?
Holes.
Thank you. Did you look at any history of any dogs with regard to any municipalities and dog incidents?
I'm going to sustain that, Mr. Lessie.
Did you look at any municipal records with regard to your review in this case?
So that's sustained.
With regard to other documents, if any, could you describe any other documents that you looked at?
Well, I also...
Gotcha. I'm going to see you at Cyber. Go until 1 o'clock, and then today we'll give you an hour for lunch, okay?
May I continue, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks for your patience, Dr. Russell. We broke off where you had described the materials that you had reviewed. Based on your, and Mr. Woke, if we could please put the exhibit that we just had, and with Your Honor's permission, republish it. Thank you. Based on your review of all the materials that you had described and your experience that you had described, without stating it, were you able to come to any conclusions or opinions about the source and nature of the injuries that you see depicted on that exhibit?
Yes.
And what is your opinion and conclusion concerning those injuries?
Those wounds were inflicted as the result of a dog attack.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Can you speak a little louder?
They were inflicted as the result of a dog attack.
And how did you form that opinion? Just describe your thought process to the jury.
Well, there are multiple groupings of wounds.
Do you have the pointer?
I do. Let's
see. And if you could use the screen that Her Honor has requested.
So there are multiple groupings of wounds right here. Here's one on the what I'll consider the upper arm, which is above the elbow. Here's another grouping. Here's an interesting complex grouping at the elbow. These are all at the posterior surface of the arm. And there's another grouping down here on the forearm. These multiple groupings are patterns, and they are, in my opinion, were inflicted by the teeth and claws of a dog.
We've discussed previously pattern recognition skills and methodology, and you just mentioned the word pattern here. Can you elaborate on what you mean by pattern with regard to this exhibit?
So there are groupings, and one can see that these wounds are going essentially in the same direction. They are oriented in the same way, on the from the almost from the inner close to the inner surface of the arm or the anterior surface towards the posterior surface.
What is the significance, if any, of that orientation you just described?
So what that gives me direction. And that tells me that the dog's teeth were over here. The dog is over in this side of the arm. And the teeth started their punctures or their injuries over here, and through either the action of the dog or a combination of the action of the dog and the action of the decedent pulling away, or the victim pulling away, the teeth made these abrasions in this direction, from here down to here. And then here, it's very complex because of the bending of the elbow. We don't know the exact configuration of what this elbow was in the arm. Was it fully extended, meaning it's fully stretched out? Or was it partially bent? Was it fully bent? We don't know. But in addition to the pulling away movement, there's also the bending movement. So that one is even a little bit more complex. And of course, there are some additional marks down here and some possible bruising down here, punctate marks down here, which may represent the lower teeth.
If we could just stop at that area, have you observed in your experience what you call that complex area pattern? Have you seen that before?
Not that exact pattern, no.
But have you seen any that is similar to it?
I've seen some characteristics of these patterns before,
right.
Yes.
And it is the appropriate methodology to zero in on one section, or is the appropriate pattern methodology to look at all the wounds and then reach a conclusion?
The second, to look at all the wounds.
And okay, can you please describe?
Why don't we take our recess?
Okay, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Court, all rise, please. Jury's closing open, so follow me.
All right, Mr. Lessie, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon and welcome back, Dr. Russell.
Good afternoon.
Your Honor, if we could please publish Exhibit 1 in evidence.
Okay.
Mr. Wolk. Dr. Russell, do you recognize Exhibit 1 from your review of the documents in this case?
Yes.
And what is it that Exhibit 1 represents?
It's a picture of the forearm of the decedent.
And we left off at lunch, and I'm not going to cover too much old ground, just to reorient ourselves back to where we were. You were discussing the basis of your opinion and conclusion that you said that these wounds were caused by, let's continue on in the basis of your opinion. Let's just continue on. Can you go through what is in Exhibit 1 and describe how it is that you came to your opinion?
Well, I observed multiple patterns of striations or linear abrasions.
I'm sorry to interrupt you so soon. Do you have the pointer in case you want to use that available?
Thank you.
Thank you.
So there's multiple groupings of linear abrasions, and linear means like a line, linear. So there's multiple of those, and here's one. Here's another one closer to the elbow. He has another one closer to the wrist. And he has another array of linear abrasions near the elbow.
In terms of these wounds, in assessing their source, do you look at them individually, collectively, or both?
Both. I look at them individually, and then I put them in context of how they relate to one another.
And how they relate to one another, is there a name of that methodology that you use in terms of how they relate to each other?
Well, I think it's a pattern. Pattern methodology, pattern recognition.
And what pattern is it that you see here with regard to all of these wounds on the right arm?
Well, I see multiple linear groupings together in an area from the mid-arm to the mid-forearm.
Is there any analysis of direction that is involved in your analysis?
Yes.
What is it?
I believe that these wounds were initiated closer to the anterior surface, or the front of the forearm.
I'm sorry, Dr. Russell, to interrupt you, but there's a fan back here which I can hear, but if you could just keep your voice up, that would be great for me.
Yes, I believe they all started closer to the anterior or front portion of the arm. They started up here, and the direction is towards the posterior portion of the arm.
Now, if we could just go back briefly, I want you to do a comparison. If we could go back, Your Honor, please, back to Exhibit 157 that we had up earlier.
Okay.
I'm sorry, 167. As between 167 and 1, which one is closer in time to when Mr. O'Keefe was located?
The previous one.
All right, so let's go back to the previous one. So that one is closer in time to when Mr. O'Keefe was located on January 29 of 2022, correct?
Yes.
And so January 29, 2022, if we can go back to Exhibit 167, can you tell when this picture was taken from the depiction?
Well, it says January 31st.
Okay, so is that the basis for you saying that the Exhibit 1 was closer in time to when Mr. O'Keefe was located?
Yes.
All right, so I want to do another comparison, have you do another comparison of the two. If you can look at what is depicted in Exhibit 167, and now go back to 1 and see if you see any differences at all as to what's depicted. Do you see any differences with regard to the wounds on the arm, or the arm just in general? Let's go back to see that now. Let's go back to 167.
Well, the coloration of the photograph is slightly different.
And what do you mean the coloration?
Well, the skin tones here are more yellow than they are in the previous photograph.
Do you have a conclusion as to why there is a difference in skin tone in this exhibit compared to Exhibit 1?
Well, it could just be technique, lighting technique. I do see some lividity on the chest, postmortem lividity, and that's what that means is pooling of the blood, which happens after death.
Can you explain to the jury what lividity is?
Yes. So blood follows the laws of gravity, and the blood will settle to the dependent parts of the body. In this case, the body the body of Mr. O'Keefe is horizontal, and so the blood is going to settle from the top of the chest, which would probably be up here somewhere, down towards the back, which would be the inferior portion of the chest in that position. And likewise, it would happen on the extremities too.
So with you just mentioned the extremities, do you see any lividity on the extremity here, the right arm?
You know, actually, there is discoloration over here in the elbow area. I do see some lividity. Okay, so there's several areas of lividity on the arm. I'm sorry. There's some right here, this redness right here in the near the wrist. I believe that that's postmortem lividity. I believe that this redness in here near the elbow is also postmortem lividity. And that's what I believe. Okay. That's postmortem lividity.
And again, lividity is that you said something that sets in after time, after death?
Yes, it's the pooling of blood.
Is there, with regard to this depiction, do you see any bruising with regard to that elbow?
You know, I think that initially, earlier this morning, with the lighting, I may have said that this was bruising, but now as I think about it, and I see all this other lividity here, lividity over here, I believe that's postmortem lividity.
And if we could go back to exhibit one, and you said this is the one that's closer in time to when Mr. O'Keefe was located, do you see any lividity or bruising with regard to that photo?
I don't see any definite bruising. I do see some discoloration up here near the shoulder. I'm not sure if that's postmortem lividity or not. It could be early postmortem lividity.
Okay. So if we could, thank you, Mr. Wolk, can we take those that depiction down for the moment? What I'd like to do is to, and we'll come back to that, if we could have the lights back on, please. Thank you. Have you had experience prior to this case in performing your pattern recognition methodology skills with regard to dog-inflicted wounds on humans? In other words, have you seen dog-inflicted wounds that have a pattern on humans?
I've seen dog wounds that have had a pattern. I didn't need to utilize that skill because I also had other information about the case. You know, for instance, police officer or the victim himself said, you know, I was attacked by a dog.
Right. And for those that you, someone, can you give an example, like in the ER, just as to how you would come to have that knowledge or otherwise? How would you generally come to have the knowledge as to a potential source of the wound?
Oftentimes it's the victim that tells me, or in the case of the law enforcement dog bites, I had both victim and police officers tell me that the police dog, inflicted these wounds.
And so for the, and how many times generally in your career, we discussed it this morning, how many times generally did someone present with dog inflicted wounds and you were told that these wounds were from a dog? Roughly how many in your career?
Well, all of the law enforcement dog bites. So that would be 40 to 60 or so of those. Plus most of the non-law enforcement dog bites, the patients or the mother have said, this, a dog bit me or a dog bit my son.
And for those that where someone said something, the dog bit my son, were the wounds that you saw similar to or different from the wounds that are depicted in Exhibit 1 that we've had up on the screen?
On the civilian dog bites, there's some similarities, but not as many striations on the civilian dog bites.
And are the more striations on what's in depicted Exhibit 1, does that lead you to more easily conclude it's from a dog bite, or is it harder for you to conclude it's from a dog bite?
Neither.
Right. So is your prior experience as an emergency room physician, as a physician in Cochrane, does that experience allow you to exercise pattern recognition skills with regard to Exhibit 1 in Exhibit 157?
Objection.
Sustained.
Do you use your pattern recognition, did you use your pattern recognition skills in evaluating Exhibit 1 in Exhibit 157?
Yes.
In terms of characteristics of dog bites, if we can go back to Exhibit 1, please. Is Exhibit 1 highly characteristic of a dog bite or lowly characteristic of a dog bite?
Yes.
Sustained.
How would you describe the characteristics of what appears on Exhibit 1?
Well, what I see on Exhibit 1 is multiple strikes from a dog.
Yes. I'm going to allow it.
Can you please repeat your answer?
Yes.
What you see?
Multiple strikes from a dog.
And with regard to, do you see any characteristics in terms of a medical observation with regard to those strikes?
I don't understand the question.
Okay. Are you familiar with the term, medical term, pathognomonic?
Oh, yes.
What is the definition of pathognomonic?
Pathognomonic in medicine means that there are the characteristics of a condition are so highly specific and unique that they basically say that it can only be from a certain condition and no other condition. So to the exclusion of all other conditions. That's what is meant by pathognomonic. At least that's my understanding.
Do you consider these wounds pathognomonic?
Yes.
Sustained.
How do you evaluate these wounds in terms of what you call their characteristics?
I characterize them as highly specific for a dog attack.
Gotcha.
I'm going to strike the last word, Mr. Wilson.
In terms of the characteristics that you have talked about, are there any other aspects of dog dentition that you can discern from Exhibit 1?
I don't understand the question.
You mentioned earlier when we had the dog dentition exhibit up, you mentioned an arch. Is there any aspect of Exhibit 1 that concerns an arch?
Yes. There is, in my opinion, an arch-like structure right here towards the lower part of the forearm, towards the wrist, suggesting that this here is made from the very front teeth of the dog. Now, when one looks at these injuries or wounds, one has to remember that, number one, this is not a mannequin. This is a person whose skin is somewhat elastic, whose skin will slide over the underlying bones. And so therefore, some of the wounds may have been created by the exact same teeth, for instance, but look differently, depending on the part of the anatomy, the elasticity of the skin, also depending on things like if there was clothing or something in between the teeth and the skin. So one has to consider the end. Also, there may be motion artifact, motion effects. The living victim could have been pulling away from the dog. The dog could have been, you know, pulling or jumping and only catching a glimpse, you know, a little slight bit of the skin with his teeth. So there's a lot of movement and things that one has to consider when an injury is inflicted on a body.
Objection, move to strike.
I'm going to strike that.
Can we approach, Your Honor?
Sure.
Mayor, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. If we could put the Exhibit 1 back up on the screen, please, Mr. Wolt. Dr. Russell, is what's depicted on the screen one dog bite or more than one dog bite?
Yes.
Ask it differently, Mr. Russell.
Dr. Russell, can you determine from this depiction, how do you evaluate this depiction with regard to dog bites?
Well, I see several groupings of wounds. Here's one grouping up near the shoulder. Here's another distinct grouping near the elbow, but above the elbow. Here is a third grouping around the back of the elbow and the upper forearm. Here's some additional marks. I think they're separate, but I don't know exactly if they are separate dog bites or scratches. And then there's another grouping around the posterior forearm near the wrist. So one, two, three, four. There's at least four different types of either bites or combination bite and claw marks.
You mentioned claw marks. Is there any evidence of claw marks in this exhibit?
It's hard to say exactly what this, you know, what these marks are. This one here, and even to a certain extent, this one here has some characteristics of both claw marks and bites. So,
even though you may not be able to determine whether it's a claw mark, can you determine, or the specific type of mark, can you determine that those are from a dog?
I believe they are, yes.
So now let's go. You mentioned, we'll switch, we can leave that up for just a moment, because we're going to come right back to it. And Dr. Russell, earlier on you used the phrase incomplete dental impression. Do you recall that?
Something like that, yes. Yeah.
What phrase would you like to use, because you were describing whether a dog or not had a complete bite? What phrase would you like to use?
That's okay. Incomplete bite, I
okay.
Might
Do you
consider.
See any evidence of an incomplete bite on Exhibit 1?
I believe all of the bites here are incomplete.
Why do you come to that conclusion?
Because, in my opinion, they don't penetrate the skin, which I would consider more of a bite or more of a complete bite. So they're just scratches on the surface of the skin.
When you say they don't penetrate the skin, we see the marks that are on there. What do you mean that they don't penetrate the skin?
They don't penetrate the full thickness of the skin and extend into the soft tissue underneath.
And what, in terms of incompleteness that you just described, have you observed incomplete dog bites in your career?
Many.
Roughly how many incomplete dog bites have you observed and treated in your career?
Over 100.
In our incomplete bites, the majority of bites from civilian dogs, or are they a minority of the bites from civilian dogs?
I believe they're the majority of the bites of civilian dogs.
Did you determine whether these wounds occurred at the same time?
I believe they did.
Why do you come to the conclusion that they occurred at the same time?
Because of the wound characteristics, the coloration of the wounds, the tissue reaction to the wounds. So they all, timing are at the same time, around the same time.
Did you determine whether these wounds were sustained by Mr. O'Keefe before or after he died?
Before he died.
How do you reach the conclusion that these wounds were suffered by Mr. O'Keefe before he died?
Because they have what we call a vital reaction. So there is an ever so slight vital reaction or inflammation around the edges of the wounds. And so that determines that, that supports the fact that they were inflicted during life.
Dr. Russell, did you observe Mr. O'Keefe's right arm personally?
No.
Is it generally accepted in the practice of medicine, particularly emergency or pathology, to observe and determine the source of a wound from a photograph after death?
It is generally accepted.
And have you, in your career, used photographs to determine wounds and patterns of wounds?
Yes.
And is that an accepted practice?
Yes.
And it is a generally accepted practice?
Yes.
Now, in conducting your, we're going to switch a little bit now to what you call the differential diagnosis. In conducting your differential diagnosis with regard to motor vehicle accidents, describe for the jury how you perform that differential diagnosis with regard to the decedent. And we can leave that up for just a moment. Go ahead, Dr. Russell.
Objection.
So I'm going to need to see you. Sorry, folks.
May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes.
With Your Honor's permission to republish one, Exhibit
yes.
One. Thank you for your patience, Dr. Russell. Is what the wounds you see on Exhibit One consistent or inconsistent with what you have seen from your experience with regard to motor vehicle accident victims?
Inconsistent.
If I could have published Exhibit 206, which is in evidence, Your Honor.
Okay.
Do you recognize Exhibit 206?
Yes.
Did you review that as part of any report in this case?
Yes.
And can you describe how you reviewed this document as part of your evaluation of this case?
Well, I reviewed the injuries, which are, so this is a decedent, a picture of a decedent, a different case, not the decedent in this case, totally separate case.
And so is this from Dr. Welcher's report that you reviewed?
Yes.
All right, so continue, please.
And so this is a person deceased, looks like in the street, and he's got multiple injuries, and this is allegedly from an auto versus pedestrian accident.
So if we could, are you able to discern any injuries to any limbs from this? If you could zoom in on the limbs, Mr. Wolf, thank you.
So there is a very extensive degloving, partially degloving, avulsion injury to the forearm of this individual, the extensive skin loss, damage to the subcutaneous tissue, possibly damage to other tissues beneath that.
And Mr. Wolk, if you could zoom back out and go to the list that is highlighted in the original of this. And Dr. Russell, can you tell me whether you evaluated the list? And if so, how did you evaluate that list in connection with the photo?
Well, the photo is limited only really to the upper chest and the right arm. So I can't comment on any of the CAT scan findings here on this list, but this was a list of numerous traumatic injuries to this person. And regarding the arm, it says right upper extremity wound with vascular injury, clinical.
What does that mean, if anything, to you?
That suggests it's a soft tissue wound. However, what they're saying is clinical, so they're not commenting on it if there were any x-ray findings, for instance. An x-ray, but I mean is would be a post-mortem x-ray. And this is just a clinical diagnosis or a visual hands-on diagnosis.
Do you know whether that line that you just read relates to any part of the photograph? Any part of the photograph?
Well, I believe it relates to that injury that we pointed out in the previous photograph.
Can you switch back to that, please, Mr. Wolk? And if you could just zoom in and just what does...
So this is the wound that they are talking about. It's a large gaping wound, soft right. tissue wound.
If we could go back to the list, please. Zoom in. Thank you.
But...
Please continue.
No. What I was going to say is that there are multiple other injuries in this person. Multiple serious, significant injuries. Subdural hemorrhage, subarachnoid hemorrhage, intraventricular hemorrhage, liver laceration, hemopneumothorax. That's blood and air in the chest cavity outside of the lungs. So it's in an area where it shouldn't be. This person had numerous injuries.
Are you able to compare these injuries and that photo in this Exhibit 206? And did you compare them to your review of the autopsy report and other medical records of Mr. O'Keefe?
Sustained. Answer the question? Oh.
No. You can take that down. From your review, did Mr. O'Keefe sustain any liver laceration?
No.
Did Mr. O'Keefe sustain any gaping, as you called it, lacerations to the right forearm?
No.
Did Mr. O'Keefe sustain any pneumothorax injuries that you were describing with regard to 206?
No hemopneumothorax.
In terms, let's switch to another topic. Let's talk about clothing of the decedent. In forming your opinion, did you consider Mr. O'Keefe's clothing in relation to his wounds?
Yes.
If we could, Your Honor, have one Exhibit 150 in evidence published.
Okay.
Do you recognize what's depicted in Exhibit 150?
Yes.
And what is it?
It's a picture of part of the hoodie, sweatshirt or shirt that Mr. O'Keefe was wearing at the time.
And wearing when?
At the time of his death.
And did you evaluate this photo as part of your review of the autopsy report?
Yes.
And we're going to come back to this. If we could please switch to, Your Honor, 147C in evidence.
Okay.
Thank you. And what is 147C?
So this is a close-up of the sleeve of that shirt that we just saw on the previous image. And there's a hole or defect here in the sleeve, which I'm circling with the pointer. And there's a label that labels it number one. And so I see this hole that is rather round and appears to have some fabric coming out of the hole towards the exterior of the jacket or the shirt.
Did you attribute any significance to the shape of the wound? And if so, what significance?
The shape of the hole, yes. So it's rounded. I actually attributed a lot of significance to that.
Describe the a lot of significance that you attributed to this hole.
Well, I believe that this hole was made by a canine tooth. And with the tooth going into the shirt, reaching the skin, and then coming out of the shirt, pulling out some fabric with it.
If, and we'll come back to this, if we could, Mr. Wolk, go to 147D, as in David, that's in evidence. Do you recognize this photo?
Yes.
What is it?
A round hole in the shirt, again with some fabric fibers pointing towards the outside of the shirt.
Is this the same hole that we just saw on 147C or a different hole?
Could we go back?
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.